Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It is Saturday Magazine with Jackie. Now, do you fancy a bit of treasure hunting over the weekend? Well, there's a worldwide activity called geocaching, which is suitable for all ages. It gets you outdoors, and you might even discover some interesting finds within your 5-kilometer boundary. On the line to tell us more about it, I have Danica McCartan from Geocaching Ireland. You're very welcome to the show this morning, Danica.
Thank you, Jackie. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's great to have you here. Now, I imagine some of my guests have never heard of geocaching. Could you explain it for some of them who haven't heard about it before?
Sure. So geocaching is basically, it's an outdoor-based high-tech treasure hunt. And we use GPS-enabled devices, and that can be a smartphone or a handheld GPS receiver. And what people do is they find containers using GPS coordinates that are hidden by others, and they then share it out or adventure via the app.
Yeah, it just sounds like so much fun. I've actually never done it before, but it sounds like a great treasure hunt.
It absolutely is, yeah. You know, it's a great way for people to get out into the outdoors. Especially because, you know, a lot of us have been lately have been indoors a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and out and go and discover places that, you know, you probably ordinarily wouldn't know about.
Well, this is it. There's so much within that 5 kilometer, isn't there, that we didn't know was there?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you know. You know, I over the years I've found some stuff that, you know, local to me that I've absolutely never known about. Up the road from me is Roundwood. I'm in Bray. And one of the years I found that there's an Indian sculpture park just outside of Roundwood, you know, and
wow.
I've grown up in Wicklow, and I never knew that was there.
Well, that's very interesting. It's news to me as well. I'm from the locality as well. That's really interesting. Tell me about caching. Like, what might you find when you do this? Describe what a cache might look like or contain.
So a cache is generally, it's a waterproof container normally, and that they can vary in size. So outside of kind of an urban area, it's typically a small little tablock lunchbox, if you can think of it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually camouflaged in some way and hidden so nobody can see it. In the cache, it will contain a logbook, which you will write your little your signature in or a little story. And there's also trade items. So the idea is that, let's say, you put in little trinkets like keyrings, and you can trade them. You can take one. So if I see something there I like, I can take that out. And the idea is that I put something back in, but it has to be kind of the same value as what I take out.
I love it. That's really cool. So how do you get started? Do you go online and see that there's something in your area, and then does it give you information or clues, or how does it work?
Very, very easy to get started these days, because you can literally just go to your relevant app store and you search for geocaching. And if you look for the Groundspeak geocaching app, you download that. You register for an account, and the best thing is it's free to get started. You know, you can sign up and there you go. And of course, you need a smartphone for that, or as I said, a standalone GPS. But most of all, you need a good sense of adventure.
It just sounds like so much fun. Now, I believe my researcher tells me that there's this is the 20th year of geocaching worldwide, and that we actually have the first cache that was placed in Europe, which has been visited by more than 8,500 people. Tell us more about that. That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, so in May of this year, geocaching turned 20. So that was in, the 1st of May, I think, 2000. And before that, there was a thing called selective availability on the GPS signal. And basically what that did was it degraded the signal, so you didn't get the accuracy of GPS that we're used to today. So today we get maybe, 3 to 5 meter accuracy on GPS. Before that, you wouldn't have got that. So when selective availability turned off, a GPS enthusiast in Oregon placed a geocache, and he took the coordinates and he posted it into an internet group, and that's where it really took off from there. And then a couple of months later, a local in Bray put the very first geocache up on Bray Head. It's called Europe's First, and it's the first one that was placed in Europe. But pre-COVID, people would travel to Ireland just to go and find that. So a lot of people...
No way.
Yeah, just come into Ireland to visit that geocache, and then obviously they go off and visit other places.
Yeah.
So it's quite a popular tourist destination. Obviously not as busy as it usually would be these days.
Yeah, yeah. And how many caches are there altogether in Ireland, do you know?
On the island of Ireland, there's roughly about over 10,000 at the moment.
Wow, that's a lot. I wasn't expecting a number that big.
Yeah, yeah. And there's been lots of new people joining over the last 6 months, which is great. So that number is going to continue to grow.
That is just so cool. So let me recap this with you. So for our listeners that are listening. So basically you go onto your phone, you download an app, a geocache app, and that's basically how you get started. And then you just follow the coordinates there to try to find the thing that's hidden.
Yeah, so when you get your app downloaded and you register your free account, you can go find geocaches near me. And you'll then see a list of all those geocaches, and you can click into that, and there's a page, we call it a cache page, and on that page will be a description. So there'll be a description of where you're going and what you're doing. There'll be a difficulty and terrain rating on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that will tell you how difficult the geocache is going to be, and that's typically rated from 1 to 5. So, you know, if you're starting off, you know, try and go for the easier ones. And on that page there's also going to be a hint. So people often mistake that because GPS is so accurate that they're just going to walk up and find the geocache. That's mm-hmm. not how it works. Geocaches can be very, very cleverly hidden. And as I said earlier, they could be different sizes. So typically the owners would provide a hint that you can see. And also you can see photos that other people have posted. And also you'll see the logs and messages of the other people who have found the geocache also.
Ah, what a cool idea. And then the idea is too, there'll be something in there, and if you take something out, you have to replace it of equal value.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Oh, this sounds like a lot of fun. I've been wanting to do this. I've boys, you know, I've like a 12-year-old and a how old is it? 14-year-old. And I think they would absolutely love doing this. And every time I hear about it, I'm like, we're going to do this. And then I forget about it. We don't go do it. So I'm going to go home and say something to them today, because I think this would be a fun activity for a family.
It absolutely is, and it's also a brilliant education tool. So not only are you're getting people out into the outdoors, but you learn new things all the time. And as I said to you, like you discover things in places that you never knew about. Now, I grew up in spent a lot of my youth in West Cork, and so I'd be down there a lot. And just outside of Skibbereen, actually, on the road to Castle Townsend, there's a Bronze Age stone fort, and you'd never know it was there. There's one sign that says stone fort, and you'd never see it. It's in a really weird position, but I never knew that was there, and I've spent 30 years down in West Cork.
Wow.
And, one of the days I discovered that, and I went up, and it's absolutely just an amazing place to see. And
well, you know, that in of itself is just, to me, very, I love finding things like that, where you just kind of stumble across something and you feel like you've discovered a bit of history. People have been here before you and you didn't even know it was there. And you kind of wonder what all happened here and what were the people like who lived here back so long ago. Fascinating stuff. Thank you, Donica, so much for coming on this morning. And is there a website or anything if people are interested in geocaching Ireland? Can they look that up?
Absolutely, they can go to our community website, which is geocachingireland.com, and they'll find some tips and information and links to our Facebook community group there. If you want to sign up for your free account, obviously you search for geocaching Groundspeak app on the App Store, or you can go to geocaching.com.
Okay, thank you so much, Jenica, for coming on this morning.
Thanks, Jackie, that's great.
That's Jenica McCartan from Geocaching Ireland.
Spirit.
Now, I have a question for you. If you guys have kids, right, and sometimes it's not kids, sometimes it's the adults, but if you have kids, are any of them a fussy eater? I have 7 kids, and it's just so funny. I've done nothing different with any of them about introducing foods or whatever, and there's just a couple of them that are really, really picky. And this is, I think, true mostly with younger children. They kind of seem to grow out of it when they get a bit older, but sometimes it can just be so frustrating trying to get children to try new foods at mealtimes, and it become very stressful sometimes for the parents and the children. Now, on the line to tell us more, we have Kira Atwell, who is a mom of two, and she has developed a really popular website. It's an Instagram and Facebook page all about My Fussy Eater, with lots of great tips and recipes as well. So, Kira, you're very welcome to the show this morning.
Hi, Jackie.
It's so great to have you here. And, you know, Kira, I've seen your stuff on Instagram before, and it catches my eye because at the moment I have a four-year-old who, out of all of my kids, is the most fussy eater. What got you started with all this? Was one of your own kids having the same kind of problem that got you writing the blog, or what got you started?
Yeah, that was exactly it. So my daughter, Aoife, she's 9 now, but when she was about 2... just went into an extremely fussy stage, and I kind of was going through like a big kind of life change. I went from living in London, you know, working in the city, long hours. We moved out to the country. I wasn't working anymore, and it coincided, I think, with me suddenly having to be responsible for her food, because she was being fed basically by our amazing childminder, you know, for the first 18 months of her life. And I'll be, you know, I'm very honest about it. I just didn't really know what I was doing. And as a consequence, you know, her eating kind of went downhill. I was then pregnant with our son, and I didn't want to eat the stuff I normally ate. So I ate very bland food, you know, very beige food. Mm-hmm. And it's just the timing of it with her entering that kind of toddler phase was just, yeah, it was a perfect storm, really. And she ended up becoming very, very fussy. So it was about kind of turning that around, and also teaching myself like how to cook for a family and all those things.
Yeah, the gourmet meals don't really cut it, do they?
No.
I know, I have all these wonderful cookbooks, and like, I cook for my family and they go, really? Yeah. No, Mom, just, you know, something simple and basic, please. So your website has dozens of blogs on the topics like snacking and lunch boxes and using more fruit and veg and all of that. So what would you say are your top tips to try to get a fussy eater to try new things?
I think the first thing I always say to parents is just like, take a deep breath, relax, because I think, especially in this day and age, we're trying to do everything right and do everything perfect from the beginning. And as you said, like, some kids will just be fussy and some won't. You know, there's things we can do to help, but a lot of time it's not your fault. So, you know, just stop blaming yourself. Don't worry about it. It will sort itself out, and there is some stuff we can do in the meantime. The best tip I really have is to keep offering foods, because I think sometimes when kids reject food, we tend to take it away and literally take it off the table for weeks, months, maybe even years to come. And it's important to remember that kids' taste buds, especially when they're young, will change quite rapidly, you know, over the course of a few weeks, over the course of a few months. So we have to keep offering up those foods that they're rejecting. It's important as well that they see you eating it, or they see other members of the family eating it. So still having foods, just say, take broccoli, for example. Keep having broccoli on the menu, have it on the table, let them see you eat it. You can put a little bit on their plate. They don't have to eat it, but they need to see that it's there and that it's part of, yeah, you know, the normal family food, eating, meals. And then slowly you can work up them, you know, touching it, smelling it,
lick it,
and eventually having a bite. And I know that probably sounds so protracted and arduous, and this is going to take months, but it really just is about increasing their exposure to those foods.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, like, I just know from practical experience, it kills me, because she'll eat broccoli, but she won't touch chicken. And it's something about the texture. I don't know. It's the texture of the chicken. She
100%.
She just doesn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, my 9-year-old still has issues with chicken, and it is the texture. I think, you know, it can be quite bland. When they chew it in their mouth, it can become quite dry. So for me, with her, the key is serving it like in something very saucy. Like, she quite likes curry now. So serving the chicken in the curry, making sure there's loads of sauce, and texture is a big, big thing for a lot of children.
It seems to be.
A great point.
Yeah, it really seems to be. You suggest making plates of food more colorful and interesting, and you've developed, I believe, a range of plates to help with that. Tell us about them.
Yeah. So, like, over the years now working kind of in this area of fussy eating, I've realized that kids you know, they eat with their eyes, first of all. So food needs to be appealing to them. It needs to look good. It needs to be enticing. So, you know, I'm all about bringing color and fun to the plate. And also, they like when things are separated into compartments. So that's what I've done. I've created these plates that have five separate compartments. They're really colorful. They're fun. So they're really great for kids. And but also for us as parents, it kind of, I've realized through creating these and also from talking to parents who've bought them now, it makes us as parents use the plates better. So we add more variety when we when there's different compartments. So it's getting parents as well, just getting a little bit more creative with food, and also just thinking out of the box of, you know, they'll only eat carrots or peas, but, you know, try putting a couple of other different veg on there. Again, it doesn't matter if they don't eat it, if they just have a little try, a little tiny taste. It's just about expanding what they'll eat and expanding even what's on the plate in front of them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's, those are great. Those are great tips. I believe your focus of recipes is healthy eating for the whole family. And I didn't realize this, but you've been on your own weight loss journey this year too. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I kind of, the last few years have just been, you know, a little bit crazy family life with, you know, my work and the kids and the home life and everything. And I really failed to look after myself. And I think, especially as moms, I mean, I don't know how you do it, Jackie, with children, but we're always at the bottom of that list, aren't we?
Always at the very bottom. You don't want to look at
exactly.
me. You don't want to see what I look like this morning.
So I think I just came to a point during the summer when I realized I needed to look after myself. And actually, you know, it wasn't a selfish thing. You know, the looking after myself was going to, in the end, be better for everybody. So I've got a section on my website now. I've called it Healthy Made Easy. So it's about, you know, it's recipes, so more focused on the parents, the really quick and easy kind of breakfast, lunch recipes that you can whip up while the kids are at school, rather than, you know, grabbing a mediocre sandwich in the
shop.
You know,
yes.
Something really quick and nutritious that you can make up. There's family meals as well in there, but the way I've done those is I kind of have two ways of serving them. So the way that you serve them to the kids, but then maybe also the way you might serve it to yourself. So maybe with extra vegetables or salad or, you know, just little tweaks that you can make that will make your diet a little bit healthier as well and make you feel a bit better.
Mm-hmm. And so would you combine that with everything? Are you talking about like your food? Do you look after your sleep? And like a busy mom, you know, like it's sleep and exercise. How do you find time for all of that?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's up and down. I won't lie. There's some weeks, you know, where my exercise is good. This past week, it's been non-existent. We've had a change to our schedule. So my son has started a different school this week, and that involves me driving, you know, a couple of hours a day. So I've been trying to, you know, work out this new routine. So exercise has gone out the window. But I know that come next week, I'm back on track. I'll get back to it. And it's, you know, it's not about beating yourself up because, you know, as parents, our lives are busy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you don't make the workouts this week, it's no big deal. You get back to it next week. It's not the end of the world. You know, and definitely for me, sleep again is another thing that I've been trying to focus on that I probably wasn't, well, I know that I wasn't very good at earlier on this year, but I'm trying now to, you know, switch off from work and switch off from the phone early on in the evening, having a bit of downtime and then getting some proper rest.
Yeah, it's all important, isn't it? And it's all about keeping it, you know, keeping it real and realizing some weeks are going to be worse than others and others are going to be better. And it all kind of balances out in the end. Now, finally, I just want to give you a chance to talk to us a little bit more about the cookbook. And you've launched an app with recipes. Can you tell us about that? How can we find out more about that?
Yeah, so I have a cookbook called My Fussy Eater. So, you know, it's very like the recipes on the blog. It's all kind of geared towards getting your kids to eat better. There's lots of tips and tricks in there for helping them to do it, to expand the foods that they're eating and different things that you can do. The app then is more recipes, again, just in a slightly different format, because since this day and age, you know, a lot of people were coming to me, they wanting just the recipes kind of digitally. So it just depends how you like to consume your recipe content, traditional books or on a website or the app on your phone. You know, it just people still like the recipes in different ways. I must say, I'm still old school. I love a cookbook.
Well, there's nothing like a good cookbook.
There's nothing like sticking to a cookbook. Yeah, so it's just, you know, there's different options depending how you like them.
Okay, great. Kara, thanks so much for coming on this morning. And I think this is a topic that a lot of our listeners are going to be very interested in hearing about. So thank you for coming on and talking about it. And wish you all the best with it.
Thanks so much, Jackie. Take care.
Take care. So for more information and to get Kara's recipes, you can go to the My Fussy Eater website, Facebook page, or Instagram. So you can find her at myfussyeater.com. You can find Kara on Instagram, and you can also find her on Facebook, My Fussy Eater. Some great tips there, some great ideas. Spirit. You know, the loss of anyone in your life that you love is such a traumatic experience, but to lose a child is completely heartbreaking, and it can be very difficult, very, very difficult to come to terms with. Anam Cara is an Irish group who offers support and comfort to bereaved parents, and they're launching their Remember a Member campaign today with a special song of remembrance. And on the line now to tell us more, I have CEO Sharon Vard to tell us more. Hi, Sharon. You're very welcome to the show this morning.
Good morning, Jackie.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Now, Sharon, first of all, I believe you are a founding member of Anam Cara due to your own loss. Can you tell us about that and how you realized there was a need for this kind of support group for parents?
Right. Back in 2004, Jackie, my husband and I, we lost our youngest daughter, Rachel. And I suppose it was after a very short illness. So I suppose we thought was the worst thing. But then after she died, there was no support. There was no information out in the public domain. And we were lost. As a family, we were lost. And it was by luck that we met other families at a bereavement event. And it was talking to those families that we realized, well, here is another mom or dad who absolutely get it. So we started to continue meeting these families. And it was out of that, you know, a group of bereaved parents got together and said, we need to do something about this. And we launched Anam Cara back in 2008. So here we are now, 12 years later, we have 12 groups around the island of Ireland. And they meet both online and face-to-face. We have a very comprehensive website. And I suppose those all important resources that parents need, you know, after their son or daughter has died.
Absolutely. And I'm so sorry for your loss. It's such a heavy loss when you lose a child. And it's great, though, that something has grown out of that that can support others and have, you know, be a support to people who have experienced the same kind of loss. What kind of services do you offer to parents and their siblings?
So I suppose the first point we would always say is, you know, come and visit the website. So on the website, we have videos that parents have done to help other bereaved parents. We have, you can download our information pack, and we actually have one of our bereavement information evenings. So that's an evening that maybe newly bereaved parents will go to hear a bereavement specialist talk about parental grief, because it's like, as you said at the start of your introduction there, it's you know, it's not just the loss of that loved one in our life now, it's the future that we would have envisaged with them. So it is an ongoing loss for families. And then we also, for anyone who doesn't have access to the website, we do have an information line that they can call us on, and we can post out the resources to them. And then we have, as I said, the 12 groups, and so they meet monthly. Now, obviously, currently, because we're in level 5 restrictions, those meetings are online.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. How are you reaching out during the pandemic? How are you helping people during this time?
We've gone online, which is fantastic.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, again, not everybody likes online, and we would have at each of our group what we call one of our facilitators, and they would be trained professionals to look after the group, and in particular the parents and any parents who maybe have had a very sudden traumatic loss, you know, death of their child. So that could be a road traffic collision, suicide, accidents in the home or the workplace. So what they can offer, if someone doesn't want to go online, it's a little bit too raw and hard for them, they will offer support calls as well, one-to-one telephone support calls.
Lovely.
But we will be back now in December with our face-to-face.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it, for people to have a place they come and to talk and to be heard.
And that's exactly what we provide, Jackie. It's a safe and comfortable place where parents connect with other parents. And this, there's no need for words. There's no, and for parents who don't want to talk, they don't have to talk. You know, sometimes even just sitting and listening to other parents talk about what's going on with them, you know, just helps you realize I'm not going mad. Mm. What I'm experiencing is normal in this very abnormal world without my child.
Yeah.
But I also think, Jackie, just, you know, with COVID, I mean, I can't imagine. You know, I know how hard it is, you know, having done it, you know, 16 years ago when Rachel died. But for all those poor families that have lost a son or daughter, and I suppose we support all bereaved parents. So it doesn't matter how old your child is. It could be an adult child, you know, in their 40s. It could be a little baby that just born. But to have to face into a funeral, a restricted funeral, and your natural support network, which is your family, extended family, friends, work colleagues, not being able to, you know, drop in, help you with things. I can't even imagine how tough that has been.
Yeah,
it's been just added to that whole trauma and loss that they're going through.
Absolutely, absolutely. And every year you guys, you hold a remembrance event on the first Saturday in November. So that would be today. Tell us about it and how people can respond.
And this is an event we've done since 2009. It is a lovely event, and like that, we held it in Athlone because it's like sort of the centre point. And families travelled. We would have up to 60 families travelling from all around Ireland to that point. And these could even be families that wouldn't use any or other services, but they just loved this event. So of course, when level 3 restrictions came in and we knew we couldn't hold this event in a face-to-face capacity, we were thinking, well, what could we do? And we decided, well, look, if we create a special web page, if we choose a song and commission a little remembrance card, and that's exactly what we did. So we've had, I mean, we've almost 400 families have contacted us, and cards have been sent out. They're all coming to the website at 12 o'clock today. And we've just asked them to light a candle, no matter where they are, you know, light a candle and just, I suppose, pause in this crazy world. Pause, take time just to remember their son or daughter. And we have listened to the song and, you know, maybe read the little reflection, which is part of the card as well. On the back of the card, there's a lovely reflection. And we also have a meditation on that webpage as well. Again, if they just need to sit and take a few moments just to sit and close their eyes and just be in the now.
I'm going to play a little blast of the song because I know we're going to play it in full just after the midday news. But I want to play just a little blast of it for our listeners so they can hear it. And then I want you to tell them how they can get involved by helping you with the song. So hang on just a second. I'm just going to play a blast of it.
You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. You can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Ooh, mountain.
Oh, that's a beautiful song. That's a beautiful song there, Sharon. Tell us a little bit about that song and who's singing it.
Well, it's actually one of our bereaved. So the original artist is Andra Day, which I know you're playing after the 12 o'clock news. But we actually have one of our bereaved siblings, Joyce Murphy. She recorded the song for us. So that's the version they will hear on the website. And Joyce would be a regular contributor to the. She would actually play a lot of the pieces at our Athlone event. So it's. We just felt this was a song that would be a little bit uplifting, but also kind of describe, you know, as the first line says, battered down and tired. And I think that, you know, a lot of bereaved parents can identify with that, particularly at this time of the year. You know, it's a horrible month. The clocks have gone back, the dark evenings, it's cold. And as I said, you know, and then you have this, you know, well, I know we're going to have a very changed festive season, but, you know, Christmas is coming, and that for parents is such a tough time. So how your listeners could help, I mean, you know, as I said, just after 12 o'clock, but any time today, if they are with mom or dad, or they know somebody who's experienced the loss of a son or daughter, maybe they'd send them to our website, which is anamcara.ie. So that's anamcara.ie, and our landing page is that remembrance page, and it would just be a special place for them to go, as I said, light a candle maybe and take 5 minutes just to listen to the song. And we've all, anyone who did register for the event, their children's names are being remembered on a carousel.
Lovely.
But what we were actually saying to anyone who didn't manage to register, look, just send them in, send in the message to info@anamcara, and we will make sure that the remembrance book and the carousel is updated on Monday.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Sharon, for coming on this morning, and I hope the you raised loads of money with this song today, and it goes really well for you guys. The work you're doing is just, it's so important.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Jackie. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Thanks for coming on. That's Sharon Vaughn. We thank her so much for coming on today and telling us about the song. And so we're going to play the song out in full just after the noon news. And we want you to text in to 50300. And that'll give, you text in the word remember to 50300 to give €2 for Anamcara. And don't forget, because it's really important to do that today, to donate to Anamcara. And you just text the word remember to 50300. And that gives €2. We'll just listen to a little bit more of that song there. As I remind you, we're going to play this song in full. Brian's going to play it in full just after noon. And yeah, so simple to do, to donate to Anamcara. Text the word remember with 50300 to remember and give €2 to Anamcara to help them continue the amazing work they're doing for bereaved parents and siblings across Ireland.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.